UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the podcast, wherever in the world you are listening from. I hope you're all doing okay. We start off tonight in the state of Texas to hear about Clifton's UFO sighting in Grand Prairie, when Clifton and his friend witnessed a large black object moving silently over their street in 2007. And then we head to North Carolina to speak to Mike about a sighting of a large cigar-shaped UFO that Mike encountered in 1976 while he was out on his paper round. This object had no visible means of propulsion, 80 to 100 feet in length, and had a very interesting light array. Before we hear from our guests, big thank you to everyone leaving ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and they are Bear 87, Climbing the Peak 1978, Whiteside 83, Bradley C 66, and Mr. Mojo Rixon. Thank you all. If you enjoy the show, please feel free to leave a ratings and review, as it's great to get feedback from you and it helps the podcast to be more discoverable on the apps to new listeners and potential guests. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the podcast, Clifton.
Thank you.
Calling from Texas today.
Yes, sir.
Now, Clifton, you have a UFO encounter to share with our listeners. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please?
Yes, sir. This happened to be, I was around 17 or 18. And before I start this, please just let me say this real quick. This is something that happened to me, and it's a true encounter. I have nothing to hide. This is why I gave my name and who I am. I didn't ask for this to happen. This one night, and it just happened. And at this age, I realized that it's almost an honor or something like a blessing to really have one of these encounters. But I'm willing to take a polygraph test. Anyone who doesn't think I'm telling the truth or think I'm lying, get in touch with Nick. He can get in touch with me, and we'll take it from there, because this really happened. And I'm just here to tell my experience. And once again, Nick, thanks for having me. And so in 2007 or 2008, I was around 17 to 18. And this was around the summertime, so it had to be around June or July. So I was at a buddy's house of mine. And this buddy of mine, we had been friends probably since we were about 15 at that point. And he's still a good buddy of mine. I haven't talked to him in a couple of years, but I can still call him and get in touch with him, and we'll talk as if we never skipped a beat. But so one night we were outside. And like I said, we were 17 or 18. This experience took place in Grand Prairie, Texas, and we were at his house. So let me say this first. His house was always the house that you could go to and just chill. His mom didn't care. She'll welcome anyone there. She was a loving woman. You could go there and eat all the food, chill. She'd rather have you there rather than somewhere else and possibly getting in trouble. So we're there one night, and it's probably around 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. And he's talking to his wife on the phone. Now, at the time, it wasn't his wife. At the time, it was his girlfriend. We were in high school, but now it's his wife. I believe they're still together now. They have a beautiful family. So he's on the phone with her, and we're sitting in the driveway. Now, like I say, it's probably around like 3 or 4 a.m. So we're sitting in the driveway, and he's sitting down, and he's on the phone, and he's talking to her. And I'm just standing up in the driveway, and I'm just looking around, bored, summertime. We have nothing to do. And if you know Grand Prairie, Texas, the only thing that was there to do was the movies. Other than that, there was really nothing. So I'm just standing there, and I didn't hear anything, didn't feel anything. I just happened to look up. When I look up, I see. So let me say it like this. And this is the best way I can measure for you, Nick. But the size of this thing had to be from side to side, at least 3.5 houses the length. And then from nose to tail, it was probably maybe 4.5 to 5. Now, once again, this thing is huge. And this thing is just floating over me and my friend in this neighborhood. And when I say it's floating over, it's just slowly gliding over us. And I'm looking at this thing. And as I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay. I have no doubt in my mind what this is. This is a UFO. So as I'm looking at it, I'm just looking at it. And so as I'm sitting here looking at this thing, I'm trying to look at the shape, and I'm just trying to basically clear my mind or get my mind to process what it's seeing right now. So as I'm looking at this thing, I'm like, okay, this is a UFO, this is a UFO. I'm seeing these little lights up underneath. It had three sets of lights up underneath. I can't tell you where, I'm sorry. That was when I was 17. But I see these, I know it had three sets of lights, and these lights were blinking fast. And I know some people say that in their experience, they might see lights and it might look like a whole bunch of lights that's interchanging with each other. So, but mine, it wasn't like that. It was just, it just looked like a white bulb that was going off real fast. As if somebody was taking a light switch and just flicking up and down, real fast, but as fast as you could do it. And the shape of this thing, Nick, okay, so the front of it, the front was like a circular, almost like an oval shape, okay? But, and I want to say like a circular and an oval because the front was longer than the side. So it almost took like a perfect circle shape, but, you know, because it wasn't the same length, you know, from the front and the sides, that's why I say it had to look like the oval shape also. So as I'm looking at this thing, I'm looking at the back now, and it's passing us. And the back is like a boomerang almost, as if you take like a boomerang and you just set it directly, you know, behind this UFO, as if you take the circular motion in the front and the side, and then the back, you just took like a boomerang and stuck it there. That's how the back looked. That's how the wings work. And as I'm looking at this thing, I'm like, okay, this is really a UFO. And the second thing that comes to my mind is like, okay, now at this point, it's probably been only maybe like 3 or 4 seconds that I've seen this thing that I start to tap my friend. Now he's on the phone with his girlfriend. He doesn't know that I see this thing yet because I'm just looking at the sky and I've only had about 3 or 4 seconds to process it. So as I'm tapping him like, hey, look at this. Look. He's like, what? And he looks up, and when he looks up, he stands up. And when he stands up, I'm not going to say it, but, and he's like, hey, man, we're not supposed to be out here. We're not supposed to be seeing this. And I'm like, no, come here. And his girlfriend in the back, she's saying, hey, what's going on? And they could contest to the whole story. I could reach both of them, and they could contest to this whole story because I know they still remember. I mean, you can't forget it. I mean, you can't forget something like this. So as I'm sitting there, I'm tapping him. He sees it and he's like, hey, we're not supposed to be here. We're not supposed to be seeing this. And when he says that, I'm looking at him like, nah, bro. Hey, look, let's look, man. That's a UFO. Now, time frame is probably 6 seconds now, because it probably only took about 2 or 3 seconds between me and him saying, no, this is me tapping him. And he's saying, hey, we're not supposed to see this. And I say, hey, this is a UFO. And that was probably about 6 or 7 seconds now, or 6 and a half. And I say, man, look, it's a UFO. And I'm trying to grab him because he's backing up as he's saying this. He's backing up back into the house. Like, he's not standing there. Like, he didn't want anything to do with that. And now, well, at that time, you know, later on that night, I got scared too. So, you know, so I realized. But at that point, I wasn't scared. But he was going in the house at that point. He wasn't trying to hear it. So I'm trying to grab him. I'm like, hey, look, man, look, we need to see this. Look, like, this is real. I'm not saying this, but I'm trying to get these words out of my head. But this is why I'm grabbing them, because I'm just trying to get him to see, like, look, man, this is, look, like, this is real. We are really seeing this. We look up again. Like, we both look up again. And honest to God, this thing is disappeared. It didn't make a sound. I didn't see flashes of light. I'm talking about, and honest to God, this thing just vanished. Vanished. I mean, just vanished. And after it vanished, me and him, we split. That right there, it made us ghost, because to see something like that size and magnitude do something that you only hear in comic books or superhero movies, or just, that's not supposed to exist at all. So we go in the house, we run in the house, and we wake up his whole family, and we're like, hey, we've seen a UFO. And I think his sister, honestly, out of everybody, I think she was the only one to believe us. And she came outside, and we were pointing where we seen it. And I even went back in, and I called my mom. And she's a Christian lady, so, you know, she started quoting things from the Bible and things like that. And she was like, son, those things are real. I mean, hey, there's a lot out there. And at that time, you know, growing up where I grew up, we really didn't grow up, you know, watching Star Trek and things like that as superheroes. So I guess to me, it was more excitement or like wonder, because now I'm like, okay, this is real. I haven't seen the Star Trek thing itself on TV as it shows, but I have seen something that I know in my heart, and I know my eyes don't lie. And I'm 31 now. So after that experience, I've done a lot of research, a lot of reading, and I have somewhat, I would say, a little knowledge on this. But I know enough to know that what I seen that night was true, and I know what I seen that wasn't a government plane, because I go back and I think there should be no reason. Well, first of all, I've never seen a government plane look like that and be that quiet to where it made no sound. This thing could have floated over a basketball court full of people or anything. It floated over, I don't care how many amount of people. And if the shadow wouldn't have showed, they wouldn't have looked up and heard this thing, because it was just that quiet. And I was, okay, there's no government plane that quiet. And if it is, why would it be floating in Grand Prairie, Texas at 4 a.m. this low to house? It's like, whoever was piloting that thing or whatever, if it was a person, it could have been, I don't know. I don't know what was in there. But a little false move of the flight stick, whatever you want to call it, and they would have crashed into about 5 or 6 houses, probably almost destroyed a block, or probably about like 70% of a block easily if this thing would have crashed. But I don't know, man. That was just a true experience of mine. And
your friend said, we're not supposed to be here. We're not supposed to see this. So obviously it wasn't something normal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. It was something that you see every day. I mean, still to this day, Nick, I still try to think of ways to think, okay, that wasn't what it was. That was a plane flying lower. That was some secret type of government plane flying over these houses training. But this thing was UFO, and it was huge, and it was floating so low to the houses. I mean, just, you could have shot a gun at this thing, Nick, and a bullet would have ricocheted off of it. And you would have ducked. It was that close. It just took up the sky above us.
And it was dark
It was all black. And when I say all black, Nick, I mean like the, this was a different black because it was at night, but this thing almost made a hole in the sky, how black it was. Like you couldn't miss it. But like I say, if I wouldn't have looked up, Nick, I never would have seen that thing. That thing would have floated right over us and disappeared. But I truly think that thing disappeared because my friend panicked. Because something of that size and something that could do what it did, this thing hit us. It hurt my friend on the phone. It hurt him as clear as day. It was floating too low. And I know it has the capabilities of hearing people talk if it could do what it did. So I know it heard him talk. And that thing didn't disappear until he started panicking and until we started talking kind of loud and almost making a fuss. Not a loud fuss, but enough to where they didn't know maybe if he would start to scream or panic to where they was like, hey, let's get out of here.
Completely silent.
Silent. Nick, I'm willing to take a polygraph test to anyone who doesn't believe. I promise you, this thing was silent as night. If I wouldn't have looked up, I wouldn't have seen it. This huge UFO, and Nick, sorry, I don't know if I said this at first, but I knew in my head there wasn't one thing that was piloting this thing. It had to be whatever was on there. It was multiple. There was no way. It almost looked like the size of something that would house a lot of people, if I could say that. When I say a lot, I don't mean 100. Let's say like 10 or 12 in my numbers. But this thing was, I've never seen nothing this size in my life. And I didn't even see a thing from the tip to the back. Like, it didn't pass me. I had to look. By the time that thing disappeared, it was probably at the back. I never seen the front because when it started passing over us, it was probably like somewhere way in the middle. So at the end of us panicking and running and before it disappeared, we were like at the back of it. And that's when I got a good look at the back of the tail. And when I say this, a boomerang as if it had like that little triangle, but it was cut out. So the wings were like that. And when I say they were like that, but they were pushed in. They weren't like that bomber, but they were pushed in as if like someone who was making this thing forgot to put the wings on and was like, hey, are we just gonna add some little wings on the back right here? Boom, there we go. There's the plane or there's the UFO. So that's what it looked like. It looked like the circle of oval and had the wings in the back, and they were pushed in. And I remember looking at the thing, and I was like, how is this thing not making any noise? I should hear, like, roaring, or I should hear this thing going off. And I remember there was a counter I was reading about, and it was in a YouTube comment. And the guy, and I guess it was a lot of people who had this encounter that day because the thing was so big, you know, you could miss it. And the guy was saying that he remembers seeing it, and he got a close view, almost like how me and my friend did. And he said that he remembered it was humming, almost like a roar hum, like you could feel it in your chest almost. And it didn't give off no type of electricity. I mean, it just, I can't explain it. Like, still to this day, after even seeing it and it disappearing, I think the most thing that still is in my head too is that that thing shouldn't have been flying that low. That's a whole nother thing in itself, but, and I'm not going to say what I think it was doing, but at the end of the day, I mean, 2 + 2 = 4. I mean, if you're in a suburban neighborhood at 3 a.m., 4 a.m., you're floating over these houses so low. I'm talking about low and slow. Like, there is no reason for that thing to be in our atmosphere at all, whatever that was. Like, there should have been no reason, because like I say, the thing could have killed a lot of people just by hitting a light pole or just anything could have happened.
I can see from the map, it is, you know, there's a lot of houses around there in Grand Prairie. Mm-hmm. So if it was military, they shouldn't be doing testing in such a populated area, not of all those houses. Exactly. Around, and so low as well.
Yes, sir. And for what? There would be no reason. It was amazing, honestly. And now that I'm older, I can say that. You know, when I was younger, I had the experience and other things happened and you tend to forget things, but that never left my mind. And as I got older, it stayed seared at my brain almost to where, like I say, I got interested in it and I just never looked back because I know that these things are real. And some people do have real experiences, and I'm one of them. I told them I didn't ask for this experience. I wasn't into Star Trek or outer space like that. I have a mindset on other things. I was a 17, 18-year-old young kid in Grand Prairie, Texas. I mean, I never wanted to be in a house. I definitely thank God for that experience, because I know that that opens up different part in your brain that probably hasn't been open since you were a kid, because that's that part of your brain that's the imagination that's not supposed to be real. But when you have an experience like that, or maybe Bigfoot experience or whatever it is, that just opens up your mind to just another world, another, like literally a galaxy. It's just a beautiful thing, man. I wish I could experience it again, honestly, because when I was 17, a photo image of that thing, like I should, if I would have seen it now. Like if I see it now, I'll be able to draw it. I'm thinking I can't even draw. Or if I was to see one now, I would be able to draw it, because I know that that's the experience that a lot of people won't ever experience. And you can't pay for that experience. You have to, like I say, you have to be blessed with it.
Yeah, you got it, Clifton. That encounter that you had, you know, in the early hours, you know, when you were 17 years old, that is always going to stay with you.
Definitely.
You know, and when you're a kid and, you know, you see these things on TV, it's just fantasy, you know. And then when you're an adult and you have these experiences, it does. It opens up a whole new world.
Man, one could only know, man. Honestly, brother. And it's like, one can only know if you had that experience, that's not supposed to be real.
Yes, it's not everyday life, is it? It's not what you're accustomed to now. It's just life. But when you have these things, which, you know, are evidently around, and we share a world with them.
And you know what, Nick? And I don't think I said this, but I wasn't scared at all. And I didn't get any fear, like a scary movie fear, like a horror fear, like, okay, this thing is about to do something to us. I didn't feel that at all. I don't think my friend felt that. I think when he seen it, I don't think his mind would allow him to process that. Honestly, that's what I think. I think his mind wouldn't allow him to get out of that, okay, this is in that part of your brain, that's the imagination part. It doesn't exist. This is the fairy tale thing. But hey, this is something, even though you put that in the part of your brain, you're seeing this right now. I don't think he allowed his brain to comprehend what he was seeing. So instead of him trying to look at it and see, like, oh my God, this is real, I think that's why he just wanted to run in. But I don't think even he got that horror fear, like, this thing is going to do something. I mean, we thought it later on, but we were just saying that because we've never seen something like this. And in the movies, if something that big, it could do oh my God. I would hate to see what was in that. Honestly, I'm glad I got to experience it the way I did. I'm glad I didn't see anything. I don't want to know what was behind the wheel of that thing. I really don't. As a matter of fact, I know I wouldn't be able to take that for me.
You're just happy of what you did see.
Oh, definitely, brother. Definitely, brother. That's going to be one of my greatest stories to tell. Well, actually, that is my greatest story, because like I say, you can't even pay for something like that. You have to be blessed with it. So I was one of the ones who were blessed with experience like that to see that. And whatever it was behind that wheel, it allowed me to see it. I don't know what that means, and maybe it don't mean anything, but to me it does.
Did you tell anybody after your experience?
Like I said, I was 17, 18, I'm 31 now, I'll be 32 in October. Honestly, Nick, I probably told, I could probably count on one hand, maybe five people. I probably told this story to my wife, who's disappointing me now. No, she couldn't miss this. I probably told her, Nick, probably 100 times. And other than that, Nick, I probably told about 5 people, buddy, because really this conversation and this topic, it's been so, people have played with it so much, the topic, and it's a real topic, but people have played with it and used it for their gimmicks and games, to where when people have real experiences and they tell them to people, you don't want to think that, oh man, this person's going to think I'm crazy, or, you know, they're not going to believe me, they're going to think I'm kooky or something. But, and I was just still feeling this way about 8 months ago, but recently you know what? I was just thinking, and I was talking to my wife, and she's a big reason why I'm doing this too. I just wanted to get my experience out. I felt like people should know, because it's a true experience, and I feel like I'm doing a dishonor or something of that sort if I tell my experience, because It was so real. And I am not, once again, I'm not lying. Get in touch with Nick if you care that much to know if my experience is real. I will take a polygraph or whatever I need to do to prove to you that this is what I went through, what I've seen. I would draw out a picture and they could ask me, did it look this size? And I would say yes or no to get the most accurate detail of my experience, because it was, yeah.
I hear you. And I believe you saw it, man. It's cool. What I might try and get you to do is, when you got a minute, all right, if you could just try and draw a sketch.
Okay.
Whatever you do remember. And what I'll do is, when this episode goes live, I'll then put that on the website so then people can listen and then they can head there and head to the website and take a look. And you never know, someone else might say, hey man, you know, I saw the same thing.
Gotcha. No problem.
These objects, you know, they come in all shapes and sizes. So it's always good to have.
Get it out, brother. Thanks for having me, because it's almost been stuck in me to where I have to get it out. I just had to get it out. And I've carried 2,000 people hear this. I'm just glad that I got my experience out.
And you know, it's important, and there's no better time than now.
Definitely, brother, because there's the news is, well, that's a whole nother topic too, but it's more in the light now than it has ever been, to where it's almost like they're trying to get us comfortable with it, or say like, hey, these things are happening more frequently. Like, maybe they'll come in. I don't know. They have a plan, but I am saying that right now is a perfect time to tell these experiences that people are having. You can imagine how many more experiences have happened over Texas or anywhere for that matter. Because like I say, with the thing being that quiet and with it to disappear how it did, that thing could be at anywhere, or something of the sort could be anywhere, anytime. That is a scary thought. Yeah. It's just a good time to know about it, man. It really is, because these things are real and they're out there and we don't know what they're doing.
You got it. They're right there. They're right there for sure, Clifton. Clifton, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Thank you so much, brother. Thanks for having me, man. You have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, brother. Keep in contact, all right? And I'll talk to you soon, Clifton.
All right, buddy.
The 40th Film Festival is a new celebration of cinema, created by people who have a passion for all things weird and paranormal. The current season is now open for submissions. Get involved if you're a filmmaker that has a penchant for poltergeists and adores aliens. Or if you're a producer devoted to demonology, with a soft spot for sci-fi. The deadline for submissions to this IMDb-approved festival is fast approaching. Go to www.fortianfilmfestival.com to submit your film or buy tickets, if you dare.
Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me on.
It's wonderful having you on. And you're calling from North Carolina this afternoon.
That is correct. Central North Carolina.
That is wonderful. Okay, Mike, you have a UFO experience to share with us. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please, sir?
Absolutely. So to start off, I'm a little fuzzy on the date because this happened when I was a kid in the 70s. And so I don't know the exact date. So I'll give you a little bit and tell you where I think it happened. And that would be in 1976, because when this all happened and I was 13 or 14 years old, I was living with my parents. I explained what happened, what I saw, to my father, who was a professional photojournalist and an aviator himself. And he told me the explanation that he gave was something to do with an upcoming election. And so for the people who don't know, United States, we have elections every year, but we have major elections every 4 years. And 1976 would have been one of those major elections. So that would have been when Jimmy Carter became president. So that's kind of where I'm placing it. And elections are usually in the first week of November. So I'm putting it in October or maybe even that first week of November. So like I said, I was 13 or 14 years old. And even then I had a job. I was a paper boy. And to the youngsters, that's when people got actual their news on printed on pieces of paper. And I would deliver papers every morning and every afternoon. And then a couple of times a month, I had to go around and collect from the people that I delivered the papers to and then send the money into the newspaper and never make any money myself because it just didn't work out. And I lived in an apartment complex. I think in Britain, you call them estates. Actually, these were condominiums. So they were owned, not rented. And there were townhomes, two-story townhomes. And there were 240 units in this place. And so I delivered papers to everybody. And, you know, it was a rotten job. And I did it for 3 or 4 years. So it wouldn't have, this would not have gone, I started in 1974 and it would not have gone past 1977. So that's where I'm also putting that in. So what I would do after dinner, when it was time to collect, go around and collect the $3 or $4 or whatever that people paid me each, right after dinner is when you catch them. And you go and you knock on the door and they give you the money. So you do that for as long as you can. And then there's a certain point where you don't want to knock on anybody's door past like 8:30 at night. So that's about the time that I'm putting this at is so about 8:30 in the evening, October, November, 1976. So this estate, this condominium complex is just a series of these buildings that have 4 or 8 or 12 units. And they're all in these little sort of parking lot cul-de-sacs that are all sort of woven around and kind of willy-nilly. And then there is one main road that runs down east-west. The name of the condominium complex was Bramblegate, and it's still there. And this road runs for about a kilometer all the way down one side of the condominium complex. And it's about, like I said, it's about a kilometer, and it runs east-west. And I had sort of been at the back collecting all the way at the end of that road, and I was walking back home. I was done, and I was walking back up that road, and to my right were all the condominiums. They were all over there, and I was about 200 yards from my house, 200 meters from my house. And to my left, there was a slight gentle rise with a little bit of a tree line there, very sparse tree line. And then there was an enormous field that spanned out for almost, I would say, another kilometer, kilometer and a half. And it terminated at this giant interstate highway, Interstate 40. And this is in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is about an hour and 20 minutes from where I am right now. And this field sort of terminated on a access road that was right next to Interstate 40. And Interstate 40 is a major east-west trunk route it goes from the east coast to the west coast of the United States. It goes all the way to almost Los Angeles from North Carolina. So it's a 2,500 mile long road and huge trucking thing. It constantly has the roar of trucks running on it 24/7. And from where I was not in the road per se. I was kind of in a parking lot slightly to the right of the road I don't know why I wasn't walking in the road, but I was just kind of walking up in this parking lot that sort of paralleled the road. So I was maybe, a few feet, 20, 30 yards, maybe to the, not even that far, 10 yards to the right of the road, walking through this little parking lot. And if I were to look to my left, I could see that whole field, just even with that gentle rise, I could see that field. And then you could see beyond that, the lights from the highway, not the car tail lights, but the lights that illuminate the road. And it gives off sort of a peachy, and it was dark at this point. It gives off sort of a peachy yellow, orange glow, these type of lights. And I don't know how or why I noticed it, but it was almost directly to my left and slightly behind me. I saw something coming at me, and from the direction it was coming, it pretty much had to have flown over the highway. And we also live fairly close to the airport. So my first thing was, this is an airplane, but it was extremely low and it was extremely slow. And it didn't have like airplanes. And I've been because, like I said, my father was an aviator and he flew small planes, and my uncle was an airline pilot, and aviation is just runs in my family. And so I knew that planes have wings and lights on the wings and lights in the front and lights on the top and on the bottom. And there was none of that. It was just this light that was kind of coming off this object that I could see. And it was coming, it was, like I said, it was just over my left shoulder and just coming at me slowly. So I just stopped and I said, what the heck is this? And I looked at it and I said, well, I'm going to wait and see what this is. So I just stood in this parking lot and I waited. And honestly, I don't remember how long it took to get to me. It was a pretty fair distance away from me. Like I said, maybe a kilometer or so, but you could see that far from where I was standing. And I just stood and waited, and it took some time to get to me, a couple of minutes. And once I started seeing it get really, really close, I noticed it was not an airplane. And my first thought was that it was some sort of blimp or some sort of, there weren't drones flying around back then, and this was way too huge to be a drone. And then I waited until it started crossing over the roads. It was over the road. It was just over the tree line. And the trees were not exactly new growth, but they weren't particularly old either. They were 70 to 80 feet high, I would think. Scrubby pines or whatever that we have in North Carolina is kind of the, and maple. I don't know what kind of trees they were, but they had been there a while. And this thing was above them, but not significantly. My estimation is between 100 and 150 feet in the air. And I'm sorry, I keep going back and forth between feet and meters, but sorry, I'm American. I'm more comfortable with feet. So it started coming over, and then I got a really good look of what it looked like, despite the fact that it was completely black. And it was your typical, what people describe as the cigar-shaped thing. It was a long tube. It was completely black, but it were very dark gray, had no significant color to it. It seemed to be flat in color. It had no shininess to it or anything like that. And it had rounded edges. It was like a tube, like I said, like a cigar, and had sort of rounded edges. Some years ago, I've made some representations in Photoshop, and which I think I sent to you, that of kind of what it looked like. And what I was looking when I started trying to do that, and that was some years ago, trying to do that, was I'm looking around for something that looked like it. And what I found was a propane tank. Propane tanks, you know, come in all sizes. Sometimes they're very short and squat, and sometimes they're very long for like industrial purposes. But usually they have a little top knot kind of thing on top of them. And you see them outside of people's homes or whatnot, but you can sort of see it's sausage-like on the end. It just kind of is sort of a natural rounded kind of end. And it was flying over me. It was going very, very slow. I stood almost directly underneath it, and it passed right over my head and to my right, and then disappeared over the buildings, because there was more of a rise and a hill to my right. And then once it kind of went over there, it was gone, you know. So I think the whole thing for me initially seeing it until it being gone was maybe 5 minutes, 6 minutes, something like that. And I literally was standing right under it. It was right over me. I could pick out some detail, but it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't lit, except with this. And this is the bizarre part about the whole thing, is that it had this light array on it that was, it's hard to describe, but it would be like a bracelet, like a diamond bracelet. It was just chock full of diamonds, right? But this, it was really these lights that I'm sort of guessing were like a foot wide, and they were circular and they were white. And then there was a row of six or eight of those, and then another row and another row and another row till it completed a complete circle around the craft. And it was, when I first noticed it, it was at the back, and this thing was rotating. This light array was rotating in a counterclockwise way. If you were standing behind the craft, it was rotating away from me. And as it was rotating, it was also moving up the length of the craft. So it was going like this. And in the time that I stood and viewed it, it probably did this twice. It rotated all the way up to nearly the front of the craft. Then it stopped, and then it rotated backwards in the opposite direction and just basically changed its direction, went back. So it'd go up and back. And that's what I saw. It did that whole thing. Now, these lights were really interesting in that they were the ambient light from them was illuminating the craft so I could see it. And I think those lights are what I saw probably more than the actual craft until it was closer. But the light that these things were putting off were just about enough to do that. They were not shining on me. And you would think I'm only 100 feet or 150 feet or something below this thing that they would be shining on me, but they weren't. And this was really freaky. And so also I wanted to talk about the size of it. The size of this thing, it was, I'm sort of guessing it was about the size of an airliner fuselage. It was about 100 feet long and about 25 feet wide, 20 to 25 feet wide. So it was 4 to 5 times longer than it was wide. And unlike any kind of blimp that I've seen, and I'll get into those in a second, but it didn't have a gondola or a cockpit at the bottom. It had no windows, had no guide lights, like I said, other than that light array, had no guide lights under, behind it, anywhere like that. It was moving very, very slow. I couldn't really give you an estimation of the speed, but, you know, miles per hour, 5-10 miles an hour, if that. I mean, it was over my head for a, you know, good few seconds. It was right over my head. And the other thing about it is that its movement was solid and deliberate. So about blimps and whatnot. So I have not always lived in North Carolina. Like I told you before, I lived in London for a while. And I also lived in Washington, D.C. for a number of years and went to college up there and started my family up there and everything. And there's not a lot of blimp activity around here in North Carolina occasionally, you know, for something. But I saw some at I went to something in Charlotte, North Carolina a few years ago to see a band, Cheap Trick, play. And it was this thing called Speed Week, which has something to do with their big auto racing thing down there. And I might be the only person that lives in North Carolina that does not care about auto racing, but they had several large blimps out near the auto racing track. And I remember seeing those. And then when I lived in Washington, D.C., with, you know, all the Washington sports teams and everything, occasionally you'd have a Goodyear or a Fuji blimp flying over Washington. I saw the Fuji blimp fly over me, and the thing I noticed about it was very squat, very oblate, and it was much higher than this thing was, and it was very loud. You could hear it. It was, like, louder than a prop airplane. And it also, as it moves through the air, you can see the wind acting on it. You can see it sort of drift back and forth and do its, you know, kind of thing. And this thing that I saw was not being affected at all by the wind. It was just moving straight and smooth like this. And of course, the shape of this thing is, I was 13 years old. I didn't probably understand aerodynamics that much back then. There was nothing on it that would suggest that anything could give it any lift. So I ran home, a little breathless, a little excited. And I, you know, my parents were watching, you know, TV, BJ and the Bear, whatever was on back then. And, you know, I told my dad about it and he says, you know, it's probably a blimp and it probably was flying around to another place. It was probably here doing, you know, trailing a banner or something for the upcoming election. But there was nothing on it that said, you know, vote for Gerald Ford or vote for Jim Holzhauser, the governor, you know, whatever. It was nothing like that on there. And like I said, a blimp has a gondola. It has rudders. It has tail fins. It's more oblate. You know, this thing was not that. But I took it. He's my dad. I looked up to him. He was very wise. I took it as okay. But I still wrote it down. I still wrote it all down and I kept a little thing in a book for years. And unfortunately, I lost that thing a few years ago. But in the 90s, I started looking up, you know, just started thinking about it for some reason. And in the 90s, when I just got on the internet, I decided to, you know, just kind of, you know, look around and see what I could find, you know, on the blimps and just say, well, maybe that was a blimp. Because I'm fully ready to accept the explanation that it was some sort of man-made thing that was flying and that I was mistaken. And as a lot of UFO sightings are, they're mistaken. I was not 100% sure it was, you know, from another planet or dimension or time or whatever that most UFOs were kind of attributed to. I was totally ready for an earthly explanation. So at that point, I still had the piece of paper that had the, you know, all the details on it. So those are kind of ingrained in my mind. But the dumb thing is that when I wrote this down, I didn't write the date. So And I accepted that explanation. And you know, like I said, I kept writing it down. And then in the 90s, I started looking up blimps and what they were, and maybe I could find out what this was. And what I found was even more bizarre, was that there were very few blimps, I think two or three, in service in the United States at the time. And I think two of them were a Goodyear blimp, and the other one was like a Navy blimp. And they all were basically the same design, not this thing at all. So that kind of piqued my interest on it. And I kept it on my, on the back burner. I didn't really think much of it. And I've told my kids this story over the years, and I've told some friends, when we get around to sitting around talking. And I've developed an interest in UFOs for sure. I would not say that I'm somebody that, dominates my life. It doesn't. It's a nice diversion. It's to think about and watch the various TV shows and documentaries and stuff like that. It's those things are fun to watch. I'm fairly agnostic on the subject. I think with the sheer number of sightings that people have seen and the sheer number of weird, just completely bizarre sightings that are out there, I think it's more probable than not that, yes, they do exist. And yes, there's somebody's visiting us and something's going on. Now, and I don't super buy into the whole alien abduction and government cover-up conspiracies and all that stuff. I'm like, I'm not super sure about that. But I do like hearing about these things where people see things and have no explanation for them. And, the weirder the better. And I always thought this was just really weird because I witnessed something that didn't really have a great deal of – it just didn't make sense aerodynamically. But there is, a couple of things that are like the mist of time. This was 46 years ago. At least. And, I could be a little fuzzy on some of this stuff, but I mean, for something like this, when something like this, this weird happens to you, you kind of hang on to it. And it's sort of stuck in your brain. Like, I can't remember what I had for lunch yesterday, but I remember this and have kept this kind of at the forefront of weird things that have happened to me. And, I've never seen anything else before or since. And I'd love to, but I haven't. And so, I've always just been kind of more curious and looking for answers rather than saying, well, I saw the alien craft and it did this and all that. I'm not super sure that's what it is, but this was weird. And it's really a cool, interesting story, I think. And the other thing that I was talking about, when I was talking about Interstate 40, I'm sort of backtracking a little bit here. It is kind of strange that that particular area now is super populated. That field is now two more estate complexes. And across the street from my thing, which was just kind of a few scattered houses, but mostly wilderness, is now just massive strip malls. It's fast food restaurants and grocery stores and department stores and chain restaurants. It's just America. That's what America looks like. It's just that. Back in those days, it was pretty desolate out there. And this was on the western end of Greensboro, kind of near the airport, still in the city, but part of the suburbs, right? And so it was not exactly rural at that particular point, but it was sparse, the little blobs of houses and stuff, but not, like it is now where it's just completely thick. But nevertheless, this thing from the direction that it started, unless it had taken a hard right turn somewhere before I picked it up, it had to have flown over Interstate 40. It just absolutely had to have. And you would have thought somebody would have seen it and reported it in something. And I've looked around, I've seen there's tons of UFO sightings in Greensboro over the years, and you can find them in various, websites and people documenting these things, and MUFON and whatnot. But that one never was there. I've never seen anyone, do anything with that or say anything about it. But even if it had just flown over that field, it would have been, I think, sort of visible to somebody. So that's kind of mysterious about the whole thing, especially flying over. I think back then it was just a 6-lane highway. I think it's like a 12-lane highway now. And but it still was massively busy. It was early enough in the evening that there was plenty of traffic out there. And then anybody else that possibly could have been standing outside in that neighborhood would have seen it. But alas, I have not seen it. And I remember telling, people, the other kids in my neighborhood that week and week after and even years after that, hey, I saw this thing. And they were like, now you're just full of it, And so I was like, okay. So nobody there that I knew saw it. And it was just me, I guess. But
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of high strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. I have the image that you sent from Photoshop, and it's an interesting one, really interesting. You know, I've seen plenty of blimps, and we've got these balloon festival down in Bristol, which happens every year, hundreds of balloons, all shapes and sizes. And I've never seen anything remotely like this.
Yeah.
There's no cockpit, no basket, nothing.
Yeah.
That is an interesting feature.
Yeah. And obviously, I don't know if that light array had not been on it, I don't know that I would have seen it. I mean, it did make one of the things that's sort of universal with a lot of UFO stories that I've, you know, read and seen on documentaries and stuff like that is that they make no sound. This one did have a very, very faint sort of sound. And the only thing that I can sort of liken it to is kind of like a metal on metal sound. It's kind of almost like a grinding noise. But I mean, it was super faint. With the noises that were just constant, that highway that was off to my left, when we moved there in 1974, we had lived about 3 or 4 miles north of there before we had moved down there. And it was in a suburban neighborhood, and you just didn't hear traffic like that. And when we got out there, it was really kind of unnerving that you would just go outside at, like, you know, when I would deliver my papers, I would start at like 6 in the morning. And it's dark, and you'd go outside, and you just hear this, just this rumbling sound, and it never stopped. You could hear it daytime, and that was the highway. It was trucks on the highway, and it just sort of amplified the, you know, and it was probably echoing around. And the terrain there is fairly flat, but with some hilly areas and stuff, but not super hilly. That particular part of North Carolina is what we call the Piedmont, and it is sort of the pre-mountainous area. You go 2 hours to the west and you start hitting mountains and up and up and up, and another 2 hours you're smack in the Smoky Mountains, you're way up there. But this is, you know, there's some bumps, there's some hills, but it's not particularly hilly, but it's not a flat plain either. So you don't have great long views of terrain, unless it's just a weird freak of thing like where I was, where I had this very long view of terrain. I think if this would have happened, you know, 600 yards or meters in any other direction, I wouldn't have seen it coming over the hill. I would not have seen it. It just happened to be right where I was. There was a bit of a clearing and I could see it. So yeah. And that Photoshop, I don't know if you're going to post that representation on your website or whatever, but that Photoshop thing, it's close. I've never gotten it right. I'm done graphic design for years and years and years, but literally creating something out of nothing in Photoshop is a little beyond my capabilities. And I would love to find somebody who would do a, you know, like a video representation, like an animated video representation of what this thing did and what I saw. And, you know, I'd love to just sit over their shoulders and say, okay, this is what it looked like, and this is what it did. So it did, like I said, it did make a slight noise, and the noise abated as it moved away. But I mean, as it was very low, very, very faint, it didn't sound like a grinding engine or a combustion engine or, you know, and like I said, a blimp, even at, you know, several hundred feet above your head or 1,000 feet, you can hear that rascal. That thing is making some serious noise with the engines that thing has on it, which are essentially turboprop engines, which are notoriously loud. So it was definitely not that. And the fact that it was just sort of moving horizontally and very, like I said, very deliberate and very smooth and not and slow. because an airplane moving that slow would just drop like a stone. And especially without wings getting a lift, it's going to certainly drop like a stone. So all that was just too weird for words.
It's possible that the sound that you could be hearing could have been the movement of the actual light array itself.
That's kind of what I was thinking too, rather than an engine or whatever, that it was just kind of that movement. I didn't hear the light array like, you know, clank or anything like that, where it would get to the end and clank, because it would go to the end and then it would just stop. It just stopped and then it would start rotating the other way and move. And that was so oddly deliberate. And the other thing about that light array, this falls under the category of not remembering and not and just not sure. I wasn't sure how that thing was attached, and how the mechanics of that would work. It seemed to be super close and attached to the thing, or possibly also it could have been just an illusion with the whole craft having lights, and then just the ones that were on as they sort of blinked on and off created the illusion of them moving. So in other words, the whole craft is covered in those lights and they just look like they're moving, and then, but it's just them coming on and off. But that's one possibility. But it really did, my memory tells me that it was almost the same. I mean, you could make a case that it was a separate thing, that it was literally a ring surrounding this thing that was not attached, that was just going up and down, like putting a ring on a finger. You know, it would just be like that. Or that it was attached at one point, which is probably, and then somehow that one point was able to revolve around, you know, somehow. And the mechanics of that escape me. I'm not a mechanical engineer at all to how that works. I have no idea. So it could be that light array was, I don't know why that would be, but it would be a separate thing, or it was attached in some way that I, you know, I still can't figure out how that worked.
And it was about 10% of the size. So the light array was about 10% of the size.
10 to 15, yeah. Yeah, somewhere in that neighborhood, yeah. It was, like I said, it was about, I don't know, 8 or 10, or I can't remember the number of lights, but, you know, I'm sort of guessing. And each light was maybe a foot or 18 inches across. And then it was, you know, each light had a little bit of space in between them. So if you had, say, 8 lights in a row and they were like a foot and a half each, and then, you know, then another row and another row, yeah, that would be about 10 to 12 feet. So it was a chunk of the craft, but it wasn't a majority of it. It was not a quarter of it. It was less than that. It was in that neighborhood of 10 to 15% of the width of the length of the craft. And like I said, the other weird thing was the lights seemed to be fairly bright, but sort of diffuse and the light was not cast on me. And that may have been because I was right near a bunch of streetlights and I wouldn't have noticed it. But you could see those lights when I picked up the thing in my peripheral vision. You could see those lights from a distance. So that was kind of the biggest and weirdest feature of that thing.
And you said it would the movement would be traveling to either end. Did it go as far as the curve at the very end before traveling back?
No. Mm-mm. No, it got close, but not all that. As it got to the edge, I would say there would be, so if we're talking the thing is 100 feet long, right? And let's just go ahead and say that this thing is 15 feet wide. It would go up to about 15 feet from the end, either end. So it was traveling sort of the middle section of the craft, but most of the middle section. So there would be like, you know, it's this long, it would go from here to there. I'm visual, but it would go from like 15 feet in to 15 feet from the end and then turn around. So it didn't go all the way. It just almost very, very close. And when I first saw it come over the tree line and was looking at it, I could see the end of this thing. And it was just odd that it just, you know, I would have expected, you know, if it was a plane and I was just somehow I was not picking up the wings or whatever. And there are absolutely no wings, but you know, the front end of a plane, you got the little windows so you can see where you're going. There's none of that. And there were no windows under or on the sides or anything like that. And that was completely bizarre. And I've seen some other, you know, I've done a little bit of snooping around and found some artistic renderings of some cigar shaped craft, and they always have windows on them. They always have, you know, some sort of thing for the whoever's inside or whatever's inside can look out and see where the heck they're going. This just didn't, which sort of leads me to believe that it was probably unmanned. If it was indeed something from somewhere else, that it was possibly a, what do they call that on Star Trek? A probe that was just probing around, just basically looking for stuff. But what those lights represented or what they were doing was beyond me. That didn't make any sense. They weren't like, you know, if they had been like scanning the ground, you know, you say, well, you know, they were looking for something on the ground. They were doing, you know, something, I don't know, sucking the blood out of goats or something, I don't know, or cattle or whatever. Luckily that was not the case because I was right under it. But yeah, that was just completely bizarre that it was just this sort of inanimate object that was defying gravity by going horizontally and slowly.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing with the lights is, you know, generally when something has lights, it's because it either wants to be seen or it wants to see something. You know, generally with, you know, like military drones, they have beacon lights on, but they don't need lights to see because they have all this tech.
Right.
So this is a good one. And the image, it just basically looks like a cigar with like a ring or a bracelet on it. So it's such good features. And it wasn't bright enough that you couldn't see the kind of like the bulbs or the light actually array inside. I mean, you've got them at about six across.
Yeah. Yeah. And it could have been as many as 8 or 10. It was no less than 6. I just went 6 on that picture because I was lazy. And I still don't think I caught it. You know, I got it right. It's still not, that is graphically very hard to do, especially with, you know, all I have is Photoshop. I don't have any vector based stuff that's very good. And I was a glorified typesetter and art director for years. And so that, you know, creating stuff out of nothing is fun. It's fun to do, but it was quite difficult just to do that. And there were several prototypes that I did, and that was as close as I felt like I could get with the tools that I had. I think somebody that had real CAD software that could really get the angles and everything from my descriptions could probably get this thing. And I would absolutely love to find somebody that would be willing to, you know, help me with a mock-up of this, just to kind of, for me to just be, just for my own edification, just to go, aha, that's it. But that's as close as I could get. And I don't remember how I did that. I think I got an object that looked like that and then just sort of manipulated it and warped it around until where it kinda. I mean, the shape of the craft is spot on. That's, you know, it's the correct aspect ratio and everything. But it's not, you know, the ring, the light array was just out of my wheelhouse graphically to do, but it's close enough, gives you the idea of what we're talking about and what I was talking about. And yeah, and the light was very neutral. It was not cool. It was not warm. It was, you know, and back then, as far as like human tech goes, back in the 70s, LED lights, which are generally cool, were not really a thing. And most everything was incandescent, and so it would have a certain warmth to it. This didn't have any kind of warmth to it. It was very neutral light. And like I said, slightly diffuse, almost fuzzy or Gaussian in a way, but enough to where the ambient light just from that thing coming off of it, and of course, as it was moving up and down the side of the craft, it sort of shone, sort of just the ambient light is what that, and picking out. And like I said, it was dark, but there was so much light coming off of the highway and the street lights that I had that were around me, that it was clearly visible. I mean, it was not like you were just kind of squinting to see something. Like if the light array wasn't there and we were out in the middle of an unpopulated area and it was flying over me, you could have missed it because it was just so black. But that light array and plus the, you know, just the environmental lights that were around, you could absolutely clearly see what was flying overhead. And I guess the only other reaction or only other thing that I can remember was that it did sort of, and I think this is just more adrenaline shock, that kind of thing. It did sort of make my head kind of tingle, you know what I mean? And it's kind of a like a dog getting their hackles up or something. I could definitely feel a hair on the back of my neck rise. That even happens now when I think about this, where any length of time, it's just like, wow, that's really, there is a physical response to it. And like I said, I went and I told my dad, and then at some point I wrote it down. I don't think I wrote it down that night, but within a couple of days I wrote it down and kept it in this little book. And I fully expected to find that book back in the 90s. I found the book and I fully expected to find that writing in that book. But we had moved so many times, like I said, I lived in London, I lived in Washington, D.C., that the book, whatever was in that book was gone. Or I could have been mistaken and put it in a different book and the book got gone. But the sheer act of me writing it down was what I think helped cement this in my brain and make me feel like I'm fairly confident in saying, being able to stick by it. But I'm also, like I said, I'm open-minded as to any suggestion that anybody would have, like, what is this? What was this? And so I guess my two big sort of things that I would like to see would be, like, did anybody else see it? Or has anybody else seen anything like this anywhere? And would anybody like to help me make either a video or just a graphic representation that was a little closer to what the truth was? Because it's just one of those things that I'm 59 years old now. I'm obviously going to carry this all the way through the rest of my life and, pass it on my kids and grandkids and just tell them what happened. So, yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. Okay, so to our wonderful listeners out there, if you are any good working with graphics on the computer and can maybe help Mike out with this, please get in touch. And for those of you who like to see the image, it's also on the cover art of the podcast, but you can head to the website below and check the link, and you can see Mike's rendition and location and some other information. And if you live or lived at some point in Greensboro, North Carolina, 1976,
yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. 1976, that makes the most sense to me.
And you either heard of someone seeing something similar to what Mike saw, or you indeed saw it yourself, then yeah, great, get in touch. The more the merrier, because it's an interesting one. And if I'd seen this, it would bug me. Also fascinated me. I just want to know how that light array is connected. I mean, that is certainly amazing.
Yeah, it was quite an interesting, just like lots of questions, just like the only other thing that I've ever seen that was like had a, and this was not too long ago. This was, I would say probably early days of the pandemic, but maybe slightly before. I live near Chapel Hill, North Carolina, which, like I said, is about an hour and 20 minutes from Greensboro. And it's a big university town. And I was kind of heading down the main road there, which is called 15501. And I was heading back to my place. And there I saw straight ahead of me, 12 o'clock, probably a few thousand feet in the air, a glint. It was, midday. It was a glint. It looked like an aircraft and then it was gone. It was just like, it was there and then it was gone. And then, but I put absolutely nothing to that. That probably was an aircraft. It could have been flying over the horizon and you're not see it, or it could have just gone to an angle that the sun was no longer hitting it, or it could have been something on my windshield. Who knows? And that's the closest I've ever come to seeing anything. And my wife and I are huge stargazers. We live sort of rural now, so we're out in the about 15 minutes south of Chapel Hill, out kind of in the countryside. And we have a field about 2 miles away from our house that we go to, and we have a little app on our phone, and we go and look at the ISS flyover when we get a flyover. And it's always fun. We take the dogs and we just sit up there and watch the ISS flyover and watch other satellites on occasion. And so we do a lot of stargazing. We have telescopes and stuff like that. And, whenever there's a meteor shower or something like that, we're always out there doing our thing. And we always joke around, wouldn't it be great to see see something weird, see something, a UFO. And of course, we've seen nothing. So, keep hoping. But I think I've had, I know a lot of people are very traumatized by UFO sightings. And I'm sure it can be. This, to me, was just more questions and it was exhilarating in a way when it happened, and now it's just kind of cool, and I'm not bothered by it, or I'm not like, oh my gosh. I mean, I, you know, if there are aliens surveying our planet or visiting us or whatever, I'm just like, bring it on. I mean, we're not doing so good ourselves, so I welcome, as they said on The Simpsons, I welcome our new alien overlords. So, you know, I thought it was one of those things that just added a mystery, a layer of mystery to life that made it was fulfilling in a lot of ways, and not fulfilling in that I don't have answers. You know, it's just like, wow, that was a wonderful experience in a lot of ways, and not at all traumatic or anything like that. It was just wondrous, I guess would be a better word. And especially for a 13-year-old kid, because the world is just kind of, you know, it's all brand new to you. So, and the fact that I've kept it around in my, you know, in my life for 46 years is pretty cool.
Mike is also a musician. And Mike, you know, it's not uncommon for artists to write a song about their UFO experience. Some of the big ones have all done it.
Right, sure. I haven't written one about UFOs yet. I write lots and lots of music, but I haven't written that one. You know, my last record was all songs that were they're instrumentals, but they all took their titles from my last solo record. I play in a band that does, you know, rock and roll songs with vocals that I don't write those words. I'm terrible at that. But my last instrumental record was all the songs were inspired by Stanley Kubrick films. And so including 2001, you know, just not the music from those films, just the titles of the songs and the emotions of seeing this. I'm a huge Kubrick fan. And a lot of these songs were, you know, had references to A Clockwork Orange in 2001 and Barry Lyndon and not all of them. And it wasn't a concept album, Marina. You can't really have a concept album as an instrumental record, but it, you know, it's just sort of guitar based rock music. Some of it was kind of weird. So yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe I will. I know there was a, who was it that had that song, Calling Visitors of Interplanetary Craft? There are definitely those songs out there for sure. And of course, Martian Boogie by, I don't know if you ever heard that one before, by this band from, I think they're from Michigan, called Brownsville Station. They have a song called Martian Boogie. It's completely goofy. Yeah. And then, of course, I played in the band and we played a song called Flying Saucers Rock and Roll, which is an old rockabilly song. So it's out there. It's for sure. There's definitely those things. I would love to see something like that again. And, you know, maybe at some point we will, because we do keep our eyes in the sky for sure.
That's it. Just keep watching the skies.
Yeah. Also wanted to say that I really enjoy your podcast for a lot of reasons. One is that you let the people speak, and Lord knows I can speak, and you just have more interesting things than the usual sort of, oh, let's talk about Roswell again all the time, talking about Roswell or Kecksburg or Rendlesham Forest or those usual things. All those are very interesting, but you know, there are so many other stories out there that some of which I find a lot more interesting than the ones that have become sort of like pop cultural tropes. And I just love collecting that information and just having it and listening to it. And that hopefully will point us to look in the skies, help point us to look in the skies at the right time, at the right place.
Well, thank you for that, Mike. And you're absolutely right. You know, I mean, a lot of these stories, you know, they're interesting, but yeah, they've been done over and over and over again. And there are hundreds of thousands of experiences, you know, just like yourself, Mike, mm-hmm. what people have never heard. And there are so many interesting details. And, you know, really, I'd like to get on as many, many people as I possibly can, but there are just so many, you know. But yeah, I like to hear these accounts from people. You know, and there's a good chance that they'll never be heard unless, you know, we give people a place, you know, a home where they can share them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I sure do appreciate it. It feels kind of like, you know, I've heard some of the other podcasts, these people, not only yours, but some other similar type things, you know, ghost story podcasts, which I listen to a couple of those. And those are absolutely wonderful for falling asleep to. And then having weird dreams. But I'm interested in all that stuff. You know, I find it entertaining. I'm agnostic on those type things, like, you know, cryptozoology and ghost stories and things like that. I'm like, yeah, okay. I don't have a super strong opinion on any of that stuff. I'm open-minded. But a lot of the people, when I've heard these type things, they always go, wow, this is really great to just say this and get it off my mind and get it out to a wider audience and get people to hear what I've experienced. And It really is. It's just been, you know, I've been sitting here running my mouth for almost an hour, and it does feel kind of like wonderfully, like sort of purging of like, oh, this is out, and it feels good. And even if this podcast, like if you listen to it back and go, oh, that guy was a wanker, you throw it on the trash heap, it feels good to me. So I do appreciate that.
Absolutely. I mean, it is liberating, you know, if you haven't never really told too many people, but there is not always an off chance that someone will be listening out there and they themselves have seen this, or they know someone, or they heard some or something. And it may not even happen for the next 10 years, but one day someone might listen. Right. And go, oh, hang on, you know, I saw that. And it does help people. It helps people to be able to, you know, get it off their chest. Everyone wants answers, and we don't always get those answers that we want, but at least it's out there, you know, at least it's out there, and there's a chance that it can get picked up one day.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Well, yeah, thanks again for having me on. I enjoyed it. It's good talking to you. I love hearing your English accent, and it just reminds me of the 10 months I spent in England in 1983. And I wish I could go have a pint with you somewhere. Even though I really don't drink much anymore, if I were in England, I would definitely rescind that and have a pint of a good bitter and maybe a chip butty or two, you know? Yeah.
Well, if I'm ever in North Carolina, because I have quite a lot of guests from North Carolina, and I know I have a lot of listeners, you know, which is great. So if I'm ever in North Carolina, I'm the same. I don't really drink so much now, not at my age, but, you know, I will certainly have a couple of schooners if I'm ever there, Mike.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Mike, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for all
listeners. Great, Nick. Yeah, it's good to talk to you. This has been fun, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, great stuff. All right. Keep in contact, and I'll talk to you soon, Mike. All right.
Cheers, Todd. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right. Yeah, you too. Take care of yourself. That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. or reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Clifton and Mike for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.